Welcome back to the TV Talk Machine podcast, episode 53. I'm Jason Snell, and across the internet from me, your host, TV critic, chief TV critic at The Hollywood Reporter. Don't want to confuse him, because there's also a TV critic. This is not Dan Feinberg. Tim Goodman, the chief TV critic of The Hollywood Reporter, is here. Hi.
Hi, Jason. How are you doing?
Doing good. How's your last week been?
Wow, it's been really active. I've been in Vancouver, doing a lot of stuff.
Yeah,
Vancouver International Film Festival, VIFF.
VIFF. Vancouver's beautiful city.
It's one of my favorite cities.
Yeah.
And I am up here watching shows and also being on moderating panels here at the Vancouver International Film Festival. And I love it. Third time here now.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Very nice. We recorded this slightly in advance. So it's like when you were in Austin, where you were simultaneously eating like chili and drinking beer and also doing a podcast.
Yeah, it's so, like being in two places.
Yeah, it's good. It's
parallel good. Lives, parallel universes.
So
go look for it, people.
So the rush of premieres is slowing a little bit, I guess, in the next week. What's coming up? There's still some premieres, but the new show's avalanche seems to have been slowed down a little bit.
Yeah, that slowed a little bit. Any super big network shows anymore. There's a couple of pretty big streaming shows that we can talk about.
CSI Cyber second season premiere comes up on Sunday night.
Oh my God.
I'm so not excited for that.
I went with excited just in case. Just maybe in case.
But The Affair, it's opposite The Affair on Showtime coming back.
Yeah. Sunday, October 4th is a big cable. Cable comes in strong on that. So you have three shows. You got two on Showtime, Homeland,
yeah,
which is going to be a big deal, and second season of the Affair, and then over on HBO, you've got The Leftovers.
Leftovers season two, yeah,
season two. So Dan will be reviewing The Leftovers.
All right,
I understand that Homeland is very good. Dan's doing Leftovers because I'm going to do Fargo. So he did Homeland and I did the Affair. We split up the Showtime show. So I did get a little report from him that Homeland is interesting direction this season. Maybe things might have been patched up. And I'm going to probably be writing about Homeland at some point as well. The thing with having two critics is that somebody can do the review and then someone can come in later and do like a bigger think piece. But I did the Affair, and I'm not sure you remember, Jason, what happened last year with the Affair.
I think you felt betrayed at the end, if memory serves, that you had some questions about the perspective shifts as the... Because the premise of the Affair was that you were seeing this affair go on from the two perspectives, and that at the end of the season, I think you felt like maybe they had cheated a little bit.
That's you. Your memory is sharp.
The Affair cheated on its viewers. Anyway.
That's so good. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
So good. I felt a little bad for a couple of reasons. One, I gave The Affair season one a great review, like a rave review. And it was based on only one episode, which, of course, here we are talking about it again
Danger.
For this season. It's something I just don't do because I've been burned so often in the past. And it's something that Showtime almost never does. So as I wrote in my review, I think that was a huge red flag. I should have noticed, like, why are we only getting one? But I gave it a great review. I thought, how could they mess this up going forward? Because it's just so well done. It's well written. And the acting is magnificent. Well, it's clearly what happened was by the shifting perspectives of the two people who were having the affair. It's supposed to be each hour is split into his how he viewed events and how she viewed events. And then as viewers, you see how they differ. And it was very interesting in a couple of ways. And series creator Sarah Treem. Sorry, I was going to blow that. So series creator Sarah Treem really is interested in the process of memory and how faulty they are. And I like that too. Her thing is like, yeah, but everybody remembers things differently. They misremember events and bad things happen. There's very unreliable memory. And so what happened is in the middle of the season, they had almost given up on the structure Jason, where sometimes it wasn't even about both perspectives. It was just one person's story and then something completely different. And then it got worse and worse and it got more melodramatic. And by the end of the season, in the season finale, I lost my mind and all my marbles out of the mind, because there was an event where the main character, Noah, and that's Dominic West from The Wire and The Hour. And so Noah, he witnesses this event. And in his mind, he's wrestling on the ground with this brother of the woman he's having an affair with, the husband. So they're wrestling on the ground. So that's his memory of how things – they go to this place in Montauk and there's a little confrontation and he's wrestling around on the ground. And then when her story comes and the character is Allison, is played by Ruth Wilson from Luther and stuff. So her vantage point of that event was that her husband, played by Joshua Jackson, had a gun and was holding Dominic West's family. It was going to kill them. And he was either going to kill himself or he was going to kill Dominic West or Dominic West's daughter. And it was like, wait, what? And so, because everybody's in the same scene, it's just how you remember the scenes. And I was like, okay, I guarantee you, no matter who you are, him or her or the neighbor, if you see someone with a gun pointing at you, you're going to remember it. Yeah. You're never going to not remember it. You're never going to have your primary memory be, oh yeah, you were wrestling around with my husband's brother. I remember that. No, that is – so I was like, okay – so now what's happening is camera manipulation, storytelling manipulation, and I had a really big issue with that, and I just tore it a bunch of new ones. And I, you know, things did not go well for Sarah Treem and the affair people at the most recent TCA in the summer. This coming season two was sort of derailed. That session was derailed because people were talking to her about the POV problems, and then she sort of interacted with me on Twitter. And then we took it offline and started talking about issues, just the two of us, about our disagreements on how it was done, which was kind of interesting. I was proud of her for sticking up for her show. I'm not sure everybody would have done that. You know, I'm not sure everybody would have sort of engaged with me like privately about like why I didn't like it. But I will say two things. One, I learned that I came to the sort of, as I say, a separate piece about this show, in that she at least admitted that to the TCA in public that, you know, they tried something a little crazy about memory and they went too far and they wouldn't do that again. So, okay, take her at her word. And then the second season stuff came in. They sent us two episodes. I wish they would have sent more. Mm-hmm. The episodes are good and there is no wild memory. She loves playing with time. And I think it's a little confusing for people because you don't, it's not just flashbacks, and she does flashbacks in the direction of the flashbacks isn't like you know what's black and white, or there's a flash and you know it's a flashback scene, or just people's. It's just you go from one scene to the next scene, and you're like, oh wait, they have a baby now. What? You know, she likes it to be seamless and fluid. And even within that, they have, when you're seeing the flashback, you're like, oh, I know what this is. This must have been right after season one, and they're still together, but they're not married yet. And then all of a sudden, you can't put together how many weeks. It's just really hard to do for a viewer. But Sarah Treem is on record as saying she likes that. She likes nonlinear storytelling where time is not the issue. I think as a fan and as a viewer, it's very important. But I will say this, the two episodes that I saw, if you liked The Affair last year, you're probably going to like it this year. The acting is amazing. You know, Moritz Tierney is great. Joshua Jackson's great. I don't think they get enough credit because Ruth Wilson and Dominic West are so good that they probably don't get the credit. But I just realized, Jason, that as I wrote this review, that like, you know, this is not the show for me because I can't trust Sarah Treem and I can't trust the directors to not eventually manipulate me for their dramatic purposes. Like I don't like an unreliable narrator,
right?
Because I think that's too easy for the writer. I think that means anything can happen. So whatever I'm watching, I'm thinking it's going one way and you're kind of tricking me, but you're not tricking me in a smart way. You're cheating because you're using memory and these flashbacks in ways that make no real sense. And your defense is that, oh, people just don't remember things the same way. So I just thought, okay, if that's the show you want to make, I think you're doing a very good job with the acting and the writing, but I don't trust you as a storyteller, so I'm not sure I would invest 10 hours of my time.
Well, I think it must be a little bit about playing with its own rules. Like, you can accept a show based on whatever rules it wants to. Like, Mr. Robot has some rules, and right. It follows them, and mm-hmm. that show has an unreliable narrator, right? But I never felt like I was... I felt like the rules of trickery were always the same, and that mm-hmm. once you figured out the rules, you said, oh, I see what it's trying to say. And right. I think what really repelled you about how the affair ended last year was that you felt like you understood the rules, and everybody, we've all agreed, here are the rules of how the affair is going to work. And then you saw something, and you're like, oh, no, you can't just change the rules.
Right. That would have never have happened. So that's the thing. And they did change the rules. And that, to me, is... it's kind of the Bible for making a television show. It's like, I want you to manipulate me and trick me by being smart. You know, whether it's like Broadchurch did, or you know, any of this really, Mr. Robot did. You mm-hmm. know, and Mr. Robot was great because it's like, you think I'm tricking you, but I want you to get this. This right. You should get this. Here's the other trickery over here, and here's the other little twist we're going to throw in. That was really clever, and they did stuff, visually amazing stuff in that show. But yeah, if you don't have the rules, then you're not playing fairly, and I don't want to crown you as a genius when all you're doing is like patching up your mistakes by saying, oh, yeah, no, we didn't really think that was a good ending. But, you know, what if they didn't remember having a gun pointed at their face? or I mean, you're a dad. I can guarantee you that no matter what happened, if someone points a gun at your daughter, you're pretty much going to remember that for the rest of your life.
Probably so, yeah.
Yeah. And you're not going to say, well, oh, right, Tim. Yes, you're right. They did point a gun at my daughter, but I was out wrestling with the brother. That's what I remember. So it's that you can't cheat like that. That's the problem.
All right, well, I look forward to seeing your review on that.
and you know, to be fair, I didn't really tear them a new one. I just made clear what I just said to you and to our listeners. But I, at the end, I said, look, I think that they're not going to make the same mistakes they did the first season. Right. I just can't trust them based on two episodes. There's 8 more hours to go. And I'll watch it, but I'm not going to be like super loyal about it. But for our purposes, Jason, that Sunday, the 4th, this Sunday is such a big, that's 3 pretty big dramas hitting the air.
Yeah, that's huge.
And also, by the way, The Good Wife returns. So
yes, and CSI Cyber. Don't forget CSI Cyber.
CSI Cyber.
And Madam Secretary, too.
You're so, Pack oh my night. God. It's crazy Pack. That Madam Secretary is like still on.
I was shocked when I found out that it came back.
Yes, right?
That's CBS. Yeah. Mysterious.
Yeah. Yeah.
On the 6th, which I will also say is my birthday, I get a birthday present. The Flash comes back.
You do, yes. That's kind of amazing. And iZombie comes back.
And iZombie, yeah. Oh, the CW is rolling out all its shows next week. So you'll get The Flash and iZombie season 2 on Tuesday, and you get Arrow season 4 and Supernatural season 800 on Wednesday. So
it's kind of amazing.
And then Vampire Diaries on Thursday.
Yeah, with the originals.
With the originals, yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's pretty big.
Big week.
Unfortunately, there's still rain. They still have rain.
They still do. I know that's not your favorite.
It's not my favorite, no. But it's, you know, they still have a lot of good shows.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Great stuff. So
and mid-season, they've got the 100s coming back.
I'm curious about how they go. I mean, season 2. Flash season 1 was surprisingly enjoyable. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's essentially like a weird, has got a lot of weird time travel elements in it. And I worry that they're going to make it either confusing or have it be a little bit unearned, actually. It's the other way you do this. You talked about nonlinear storytelling and how Sarah Treem likes that. And I was going to say Stephen Moffat likes that too, when he does that in Doctor Who. And there are moments where you say, I think you're using time travel to cheat now. And that's my concern about The Flash, is they've had some scenes last year where it was sort of like, oh, big things just happened, and oh, they got erased because time travel happened. And so I think it'll be interesting to see what the rules are that they set up for season two of The Flash, and if they're going to put some rules in place that mean that it's not always just sort of shifting sands and everything can always be rewritten, because that was my concern. It didn't really affect the show last year, but it'll be interesting. They're building this for the long haul. They can't, you know, they got to keep some rules in place, or it's just going to be a discombobulated mess. So I'm looking forward to it, though.
Yeah, sure. That's interesting. That's interesting. And by the way, happy birthday.
Thank you.
Because by the time we have our next podcast after
it'll
this
be over.
One, you'll be over.
It'll be all over. So thank you.
But I will say, though, that that's your birthday on October 6th. You're going to get Flash and get iZombie.
Yep.
The thing that's going to be interesting the next day, by the way, so two things. I'm not a big fan of American Horror Story. But it's coming out, American Horror Story Hotel. So that's going to be good. But, and I've already reviewed this, so we can put the link up at when the time comes. So Hulu has a really, really good comedy that I think everybody should put on their calendars to watch on the 7th. And it's called Casual. And yeah, it's Jason Reitman's show. And Xander Lehman wrote it. I want to keep saying Lehman. It's probably Lehman. I've actually never heard anybody say it out loud. So that's probably the first. Once I get that done, that'll help.
This is one that was at the Toronto International Film Festival, and we talked about it a couple of weeks ago. And the cast was really happy that a tough critic like Tim Goodman said nice things about it.
That's the one.
That's the one. Very nice.
And it's here, and people can watch it now. And that was some time ago. So it's really good. I think people should take a look at it. I loved it, and October 7th on Hulu. Casual. Don't miss that.
Did you see Red Oaks?
I did see Red Oaks. Yeah,
that's coming back on in a week. So right as we were posting next episode, but that's coming back next week too.
Yeah, I think the thing with Red Oaks, I love it. So that's your second streaming service. That's
Amazon, right?
Yeah, and the official review in THR will be from Dan, who's gonna he'll see more of the episodes. I really like the pilot. I like where they're going on that series. I think that there's. It's produced by Soderbergh, and he's handed it off to good people and really great cast. And I think THR had one of the stars, Craig Roberts, the guy. He's kind of this minchy guy who's caught in this thing. I mean, there's big stars, right? There's Paul Reiser, Richard Kind, Jennifer Grey is in it. Craig Roberts is great. He has to be good because he's the anchor for the whole thing. And it's the 80s. It's set in the 80s. It's really fun and a throwback and a really good cast. And I think people will tune into that and they'll like it as well. So two really great comedies coming out from the streaming services.
Two streaming. Yeah. So I guess if we've got a story for this coming week, it is the premieres of new shows are kind of past us, but the a lot of heavy hitters returning, and then yeah, we're getting the new show with Casual, and we're getting it is a new show, Red Oaks, but the pilot was public, right? So the pilot kind of has been kicking around, because it's
but
Amazon.
You can get the rest of the episodes,
but the rest of them will be out next week. So it's a lot of good stuff there.
Yeah, it's true, and that is a good theme because it just makes you think like, God, we've gone through the slog of all these fall shows. And then tricklings of other things. But now it's kind of all the returning shows are coming back. And October has been and will be a really busy month.
Yeah. Want to do some listener stuff?
Let's do
stuff?
That.
Listener stuff?
Yes.
All right. Let's see. We've got from Dean in the ampersand, right parentheses, ampersand, which is just he held down the shift key. That's the 707.
Okay.
He said, right. I wonder if there was a bit of a Revenge of the Nerd in the victory at the Emmys last week for Game of Thrones. I became curious which nerd and geek shows have been nominated for Best Drama at the Emmys. I found out The Twilight Zone was nominated once, the original Star Trek once, Beauty and the Beast twice, believe it or not.
Wow.
That's the George R. R. Martin speaking of Game of Thrones, that's
oh, that, he that did was, that too.
He did the Beauty and the Beast and the with Ron Perlman and Linda Hamilton. That was that was George R. R. Martin who did that.
Wow.
He was the he was the I think the showrunner on that.
Yeah, the writer and the showrunner.
Yeah, Quantum Leap 3 times. Go figure. Star Trek: The Next Generation once. That was the last season. That was their little salute. Uh-huh. The X-Files 4 times. And the but the only sci-fi or horror or fantasy genre show that won before this, according to Dean, was Lost. Do you think the nerd power will continue to rise? Will it heal any of the pain of Buffy never being nominated for Best Drama? That's Dean from the ampersand, right parenthesis, ampersand.
I remember Lost winning, yeah. I thought that X-Files won, but I guess that's can't be possibly true. Even in its time, it was still kind of a, it was still like genre-y and more clicky than it was a hit. Mm. Yeah, I think that there, obviously, I think the doors have been blown wide open for...
Nerdy shows,
absolutely.
Genre shows.
I mean, they dominate the movies, and right. and you know, and now with
but there's not a lot of prestige. I mean, like what are your prestige genre shows on TV? Like the prestige genre shows, you got Game of Thrones and Walking Dead.
Prestige.
Would the Walking Dead get nominated for best drama?
I've been on record already, Jason, as saying I think that that's overdue, and it's criminally neglected. It's like the most popular show. Cable show on TV.
Yeah. It's one of the most popular shows of the last 5 years.
Yes.
The Walking
Dead. That and Empire are huge right now for present time. But that one gets Walking Dead should get a lot more credit than it does. But yeah, when you say prestige, that does kind of narrow it down.
Right?
A little
bit. Isn't that like there are a lot of genre shows that people like, but you know, like The Flash is probably not going to be nominated for Best Drama, right? As fun as it is, that's unlikely to happen because it just doesn't sound like an Emmy show. And I wonder, you know, will we see more genre-y kind of shows or that are more prestige-like, or will we see some prestige shows that have a little, you know, like The Leftovers is like that, right? That's a prestige show that also has that little touch of, you know, weird genre aspect to it.
Yeah, I'm thinking that when Netflix starts rolling out some more of its Marvel properties, then we'll have to see. I mean, if any of those get a little bit tougher,
that's interesting.
Than the ones in the past, maybe. But yeah, it's really interesting when you say prestige, because when you say it's interesting because you can if you say genre, you have a bigger field. But because you have that, you'd have to put horror in there and an American Horror Story. That obviously is a Emmy's favorite. But if you just say like nerds and prestige nerd show, it's really Game of Thrones and Walking Dead.
I think you make a good point. American Horror Story is another example that's in there. But it's the field seems to really contract once you start thinking, well, what would really plausibly be thought of positively by the Emmy voters?
Well, and clearly they're putting American Horror Story. They're putting that in the miniseries category,
right.
So that rules it out for the drama category.
Right.
And then The Walking Dead has been overlooked, and so that just leaves us with Game of Thrones. But now I think anything can happen now, because I hate to say it, if the Americans haven't been nominated after 3 seasons, they probably won't get nominated. And then I think it's the best show on TV after that. Well, I mean, the best show on TV, I think, period, but it's you have to judge it as a miniseries, is Fargo. Mm. So we'll see how it goes into season 2. But boy, without Mad Men and without Breaking Bad to compete with Game of Thrones, we might be looking at, well, I mean, you know better than I how many seasons they think they're going to get going forward.
Well,
there was no book.
Who knows what they've said most recently, but it's you know, 3 or 4 years at least, I think.
Maybe 3 or 4 more seasons, and you might have a pretty good run there for Game of Thrones, unless, because there's not a heavy hitting cable show on there, it might revert to something like, say, Empire or Good Wife. So it's possible.
Interesting, provocative question from Dean. Thank you, Dean.
Good one, Dean. And also, by the way, I think going forward, we are going to see a streaming series get an Emmy probably next season.
I was actually going to say The Man in the High Castle has some possibility of being one of those prestige genre kind of shows, and that's coming from Amazon this fall. So
yeah, I think it's in the middle of October.
Yeah, so that might be something.
Yes, good call,
John on Facebook. mm-hmm. wrote in to say, and
so
I neglected
area code, right?
I've neglected Facebook the last couple of weeks, but I've been checking in. Don't stop posting things on Facebook, people. And we've got a group there, so check it out if you're on Facebook and you're not a fan of the TVTM yet on Facebook. Please do visit us there.
Please do that, because we might be putting some information out there once I get my act together. And who was the great person who said make the call for to do the TM? Obviously we didn't plan ahead for our 1 year anniversary, but
we might put something together for a special thing, and we'd post it on Facebook. So
the Parkway Theater maybe. Mm. And that's where we post it. That's the point. We'll post it
so, and follow us there. And mm-hmm. we'll also warn you when we're posting new episodes so you can hide.
Right.
So John on Facebook says, Tim and Jason, I'm not a TV producer, but I play one on the TVTM. Tim's review of The Player gave me a great idea. A group of billionaires invent a machine, a bastard machine, that can predict whenever a lame-brained idea for a show will get green-lighted by the studios. Then they recruit a brilliant red-haired, red-wine-swilling TV critic. I'm thinking Damian Lewis. And bet on whether or not he can stop it before the second episode is aired. What do you say? Are you in or out? That's John
so
from
in.
The 9 to 5, where people have to work in the morning.
Nice. I like John. He hit all the keynotes.
This is like TVTM bingo just happened right there.
And I love that he turned the 9-2-5 into the 9-5 where people have to work.
Yep.
That's very good. That's very strong. Damien, if you want Damian Lewis to play me, I would love that because he's in shape. He's a good-looking man, and he's got a great accent. Although he doesn't use an American accent.
But
I have red hair, though.
He can do a decent American accent.
He'd have to grow his hair out a lot longer to be like my hair. But I don't think my hair's red.
No.
But I love that. That's a great concept, because I think if we did have the bastard machine, it would kill all these shows before they wouldn't even kill them before the second episode. They would never get the pilot. That's always been my pitch to the industry. I can save you millions of dollars. Why did you shoot this pilot? Because this is a load of just total donkey
Should maybe this actually happens. Shouldn't studios and networks have basically internal TV critics who watch this stuff and say, this is never going to make it, this is a disaster? Shouldn't they just have their own, save themselves
some
time?
They always think they're right. And
they would never listen to the person, whoever it was.
They would never listen to it. That's the whole problem.
Yeah.
You could have this smart, I mean, that wouldn't be me, but like you could have the smartest person in the room, who would be John Landgraf from FX. You could sneak him in, kind of like the intern.
Mm-hmm.
See what I did there with the movie reference? Uh-huh. Yeah.
Fair enough.
So you kind of put a mask or a beard on him or something, and you move him into, say, ABC or NBC, because they need more help. And you have him be like the in-house advisor. No one would listen to him.
No.
He'd be the smartest dude in the room. He'd say, you know what? That's never going to work. No one will ever watch that. But the head of the network, if he says he likes it, everybody's going to say, oh, I love it too. Love it too. That's the problem in a nutshell with an industry. There is literally nobody who stands up and says, I disagree, sir. So there you go.
Next one is from Hobo Eric in the Plus 4-4.
That is never going to not be funny to me. Maybe in a year, maybe during our second anniversary, because I didn't know that was coming, and just you saying it made me laugh.
I know. Hobo Eric here from the Plus 4-4. Scream Queens, I know it's not your cup of rosy. That's mm-hmm. Cockney rhyming slang for tea, don't you know?
Ah, see?
The Plus 4-4 knowledge there. But I thoroughly enjoyed it. It's right in my wheelhouse, and it's making me even more excited for American Horror Story Hotel. What can I do to make you watch at least the first couple episodes? I mean, Lady Gaga, happy emoji. He just typed the words happy emoji. Can you even? Is this something to farm out to Jason? Nope. If you watch Hotel, I promise to give the Americans another chance, for which my opt-out moment was the general ickiness of the main characters in the pilot episode. Cheers, Hobo Eric.
Well, there is a chance. Here's the weird part. I'm not sure I need to watch Scream Queens now, because it could be nebulously dead in the, it's not dead in the water yet, so we'll see. If it stays alive, maybe. I mean, I have the pilot, and mm-hmm. it ended up being more, as Dan said, a little less scary than scary people might have wanted it to, and a little campier than horror fans would have wanted mm-hmm. it. But we shall see. But here's the thing. I actually may – this is
breaking news.
I may watch American Horror Story Hotel, and here's why. I'm fascinated – from the architectural standpoint of how they built this hotel on the lot.
Mm.
Totally weird way to come out of a TV show, I guarantee you. But because I like architecture and design, when I sat through the American Horror Story panel, Everybody, and in fact, even when it wasn't their panels, everybody was saying, "Oh my God, have you actually been to the set? Have you seen the hotel?" Like, and people were saying, "I want to steal things from it already." Actors were like, "I want to take like what we got for the glasses, or I wanted this." So apparently, this is something spectacular to see. So the Dwell modernist architecture geek inside of me might break down and watch American Horror Story just to see the hotel.
Wow. That was the trick. That's how Ryan Murphy gets you to watch one of his shows.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be amazing?
The old architecture trick. He'll build a hotel trick.
I see a column coming now, and that would be funny. What if I liked it? And Ryan Murphy would really not know what to do.
No. Dean from the 707.
Oh, yeah.
Writes in and says, "Tim, thank you for your mea culpa on You're the Worst. I hadn't remembered hearing about the series and watched all of season one on Hulu since I read your piece. Any danger of these characters becoming less awful? I always appreciated the consistency of awfulness of the characters on It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, and I thought that MASH's quality dissipated as characters got nicer. Have you and Jason considered upping your awfulness on the TVTM?"
Well, we actually have. I don't think you've ever been awful. You are a nice man.
This is, by the way, this is our second letter from Dean. Dean, what the hell are you doing? Why did you write us two letters? I think I just skipped it last week. I wanted to use this to say I also watched the first couple episodes of You're the Worst, and I think it's great too. So I'm glad that you revisited it because that made me try it, and I really have enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think I retweeted your tweet, and I think Stephen Falk, who creates the show, then favored it.
Wow.
Which is really interesting, yeah. It was like, in fact, he did. You said, yep, Bastard Machine was right. It's second time go around.
Yeah.
He did. He actually favorited that.
That's cool.
Very funny.
That's cool.
So Stephen, so that is a very perceptive question for Dean, because I think he's right that MASH did get softer. And one of the genius parts of Sunny is that it didn't. They continue to be unlikable assholes, but it's great. Check the box. I wanted to check the box because I think I said cow dewy or something very tame, which was not like me. And I was trying to get around the box. And then as it came out and I said, it's almost like saying bull pucky or something that's not how I would normally talk. I'm a filthy, filthy bastard. Right. And I swear all the time.
So you can retain your awfulness.
Yes, I can retain it. But I don't think that You're the Worst is going to, it's a worry. Sure. Because as they come together and find something that appropriates, intimacy and love, they might soften up. But no, I don't think so. This whole season has been about, second season has been basically about that. So no, and Stephen Falk, it's just too funny to go soft on us. So I'm not worried about that at all.
You know, the way I view it is it's like a romantic comedy, warts and all. And that's the whole point, is that there is no – everybody's got issues. Everybody's got bad behavior. And these people are a little more exaggerated in some ways. But that's kind of why I like it, is this is an exaggerated version of any kind of getting to know somebody and being in a relationship with them. As you discover all the things you like about them, you also discover all the things that they do that are horrible. And I like that about it. I thought it's on TV and so it's exaggerated a little bit, but no, it was, that's what I liked about it. So I, if this turns into everybody's great and the sun is shining and every day and it's always sunny in Philadelphia, which I didn't mean that way. I don't even know how you would do that. That would be malpractice, because that's not what the show is. The show is that these people are flawed and broken and funny because they are. So,
right.
It seems unlikely.
I'm not worried about it. Yeah, it seems unlikely.
Yeah, that they would sand the edges off of those characters. But anyway, thanks for the recommendation for me, too, because I like Dean, I dove in after your re-endorsement.
Yay!
Here's a new one from Brad in the 905.
Ooh, 905.
Yeah.
I'm getting on that right now.
This is a Greater Toronto area.
Oh, so Canada. Geez, God, all right. Either you're faster than me, which we know, but yeah.
Yeah, it's Google. I'm good with
Google. Yeah, you're right.
Mm-hmm. So Brad says, Tim and Jason, I thought you'd be interested in an implementation of the power rankings. The food remember the power rankings, Tim?
Oh, I do remember
the food. Yes, this is really interesting. The food magazine Lucky Peach has sampled and power ranked Lunchables. placing them on a grid from taste bad to taste less bad horizontally and bad for you to less bad for you vertically. And he sent in the link, which I'll put in the show notes. It's a little grid. It's like a little, you know, it's like a little scatter plot in these two dimensions of the power rankings. So their review of nachos, cheese dip, and salsa is particularly TV centric. It says, on the parenting scale, June and Ward Cleaver being the highest, Marvin Gaye Sr. being the lowest, giving this to your children for lunch puts you somewhere near Jamie and Cersei Lannister. So,
wow.
So what Brad asks is, would TV shows fit on a similar grid with the new power rankings? Is there TV that is bad for you yet enjoyable to watch? Can you truly enjoy TV that is good for you? As an aside, I'm not sure who I feel more sorry for, Jason for watching CSI Cyber or the people who had to eat all those Lunchables. Sadly, Lunchables are a thing. Looking forward to the new power rankings, Tim. Thanks, Brad, in the 905.
Wow, I'm looking at this right now, and it is pretty impressive.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah, let's. How do we rank Lunchables? And the answer is, we made a little chart that. So if you want the taste less bad and less bad for you, I guess the ultimate deep dish pizza with pepperoni Lunchable is the, is
that
the
champ. Seems to be the pizza with pepperoni is the worst, right?
And the it tastes less bad and is less bad for you. So I think that's the best.
Yeah. Oh, I see what you're saying. And the six pizza piece with pepperoni on the other side and the six piece chicken dunks.
Boo. Yeah, the pizza with pepperoni is down there too, but the ultimate deep dish pizza with pepperoni is up on the other side. So go figure. Bad. Anyway, that's thank you to Brad for that. And just, you know, another thing to churn around, lots of alternative ways of presenting data when you're rethinking how you're going to work on the power rank.
Clearly. And I've clearly been thinking about it so much. Mm-hmm. Notice how I talked to you about it when I was in Big Sur?
Yep. Yep. Well, you know, you just keep it rolling around in there. It's a busy time, but you know, it's you're going to come out of this busy time, and then I think you're going to have that moment of like, okay.
I am. I'm going to have a breakthrough moment. Like, I know how to do this.
I got two more for us. Okay. Indy Sarah, our buddy.
Oh, yeah. Love her.
In the 317, she says, I'll keep it short. 15 minutes into the first episode of Mr. Robot, and I love you guys even more than I already did. Thank you. I just like that. I like it.
It's good to be loved. She's a hugger.
Yeah, she is.
She's a hugger. Mm-hmm.
And then I have one more a link sent to us by one of our frequent correspondents, Athrin.
Oh yes,
And it's from Netflix, and it's she sent an article summarizing this on Engadget, but I'll put the original Netflix PR Newswire item in the show notes. An article on the buy-in moment that you guys often talk about, and this is Netflix did this PR a couple of days ago that talks about, it's like almost like they're opening their data slightly in order to make this PR point, but it's the analysis of when people go on a binge. And it's interesting because Ted Sarandos actually says, in research of more than 20 shows across 16 markets, we found no one was ever hooked on the pilot. Which is, it's interesting that they came out with this while all these pilots are premiering, no less.
Well, I think that's why they did it.
Yep.
I think that was really smart from a PR perspective. I know I'm familiar with this, and because I know that it irritated a lot of people about like its methodology, because I think this works if you, and you can probably figure this out better than I can. But this methodology that they use works in a binging environment when you have all the other ones to go, right? Like if you can watch a bunch of these episodes in a row, then the pilot makes less, it's less important. So you can say, I was hooked on the second, or everybody was hooked on the fourth. So they said like three episodes for Orange is the New Black, six for Mad Men. But I don't think that works in the real world of non-binging television, meaning cable and network, and even streaming services that are only dropping it once a week. I don't think that works.
Because it's a longer relationship then, instead of finishing it in a weekend.
Yeah, and I think that if you're going to binge, you will naturally go to the second episode and go on. And some people are coming to these shows like Orange is the New Black after a year of having every coworker in the world talk about it. So you will watch it longer. Whereas if you just turn on your TV and you have Blind Spot, Doodle Booty, you're going to have to just judge it by that one thing.
Yeah,
I think, like you said in the last podcast, that you got hooked on it because it was not the greatest show in the world, but you might watch another one just because it was intriguing. Whereas I said the opposite for the player, it's just so hokey and stupid you wouldn't watch it. Right. So I think they're getting a little tricky when they say pilots don't matter.
It is interesting data though that it turns out that that they have the correlation. Like once, how far do you have to go before you get most people completing the season? But you know, on the other hand, I guess it's just sort of common sense, right? That this is a stat that is literally they're waiting until 70% of the people completed the whole season, and how far in do you have to be? So it's still, I find it fascinating, and I appreciate Athren for setting the link in, because it is Netflix actually using some of their data, which they so famously sort of don't share.
Yeah.
So even though they're doing it in this PR kind of way, and it's unclear what this actually means and whether the methodology makes any sense, it is it's still kind of interesting that they did it at all.
Yeah, and as far as methodology goes and statistical analysis, some of the things that I find most interesting about the data that Netflix and Amazon both have that they will speak about in public, but they don't present you with things. It's not the ratings that interest me. I like that they are fascinated about when people tune out. So, and it's not that this isn't available to network people as well. I mean, you can put a testing room and you can find out when people get bored. But like these guys have it down to the precise seconds and minutes. Mm-hmm. Like in the 18th minute, you were really going along. And then we found statistically, let's say 34% of the people immediately got bored here. Now, I like that. I find that fascinating because it puts a lot of pressure on a storyteller to say, wait, what in my story stopped people? And I've talked to them a little bit about this because storytelling and/slash analysis don't always go together. You write stories a lot, so you know this. You've written a lot about trying to jam out fiction and do stuff mm-hmm. and come up with stories. You wouldn't want, like, there might be parts of a story you want to be slower, or you on purpose you want it to be. I mean, if you just blow things up all the time, then you're talking about the current state of the movie business, and people are always going to be like, yes, I stayed in tuned, but then as they started to tell me about the plot, I got lost. So I'm always wondering what these services do to the people who make their shows. Do they go back to them and say, hey, I think your middle point is saggy, which is true for most stories, but I'd be interesting to say, like, hey, in the three-quarter mark, when you ratcheted it down a little bit to get a little bit more intimate and a little bit more sentimental, people kind of got bored.
Yeah.
But if you're a storyteller, you might think, you know what, that sentimentality softens the character, right?
And then it pays off six episodes later, so exactly. They don't realize that they're that struck me in reading this PR was, if you're a creator at Netflix, maybe they don't intervene so much, but I bet you this data gets dropped on creators. I bet you behind the scenes, since the Netflix is, you know, these are also tech guys, and they've got all this data that If you're an executive producer of a show that performed okay and got renewed for a second season, I wonder if they come in and say, well, look, you know, I saw your script for this episode, but we've got the data that says that this is not going to work and you really need to do some stuff. It could lead, depending on how it's used, to kind of like the worst kind of micromanagement based on data, as you said, instead of making smart storytelling decisions, because now it's all down to, you know, by episode four, you have to have these two characters have this thing that they complete, or otherwise nobody's going to buy it. And that's not necessarily good storytelling.
Exactly. And I am not a believer, and part of me doesn't want to believe, that you can drop art into a computer and have it analyzed like that. We didn't like the part in this great novel where
are human emotions being featured here. I actually wonder that one of the things they said is that it took five episodes on average for Daredevil to reach the point where it got to 70% completion. I like Daredevil, but I look at that and think, that's really interesting, because that's kind of Netflix saying a lot of people didn't make it to episode 5 of Daredevil, right?
Right, yes.
Right, because ideally, I mean, yeah, it's like, oh, it takes 5 episodes, and isn't that fun? But I kind of view that as, how many people did you lose? Because it took 5 episodes before people were committed. There were people bailing after 4 episodes of Daredevil, as opposed to something like House of Cards, which was 3 episodes, Origins the New Black was 3 episodes. I think that's interesting. That, and Breaking Bad was 2 episodes, right? Like, if you watched 2 episodes of Breaking Bad, you were in. You bought in. And so I think it's interesting that they shared that about Daredevil. And they didn't seem to share it about Sense8, which I think is interesting because it might be no, like, 12 episodes.
Yeah, I mean,
everybody
who
watched it all
point.
Watched it all, and nobody else. I don't know, because they didn't share it.
That is funny. Yeah, it's I'm glad she shared it with us, because it is interesting. And look, hey, we live in amazing times.
Yeah.
That's my toss out line when things just seem great and or mystifying.
Please make your protagonist more likable. Beep, beep, boop, 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 boop.
I do think we should maybe feature the I think we should feature your voice as the computer tossing back feedback on TV shows and art.
The TV robot.
TV robot.
The TV robot.
TV robot does not like this. Yes.
I find the age difference between the male lead and the female lead distracting. Boop, 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 boop. Something like that.
Oh, yes. You know what? We had so many voices on the first one. We might have to make room for...
do some new characters here.
TV bot may have to comment on things, because we could both do robot sounds pretty easily.
Yeah, that's nice.
Mm-hmm.
That's what people,
right, something to think about.
Is that what people tune in for?
It might end up being the one thing. Netflix proved.
Yep. All right. Well, I think we've reached the end. So
yes.
Have fun in Vancouver. Continue to have fun in Vancouver.
Woohoo!
As you were already doing.
Oh, it's just amazing.
And we'll be back in another week with more TVDM. So thanks again, Tim. It's been a pleasure.
All right, Jason. Talk to you soon.
All right. We'll see everybody next week.